If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Court Appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Philosophy. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Wasting away again in Margaritaville. What a weekend, Mike. What a weekend.
Yeah, you have a Buffett glow about you.
Oh, yeah. He can't come away from a Jimmy Buffett concert without a glow.
Yeah, I was wondering why you had a parrot on your head.
Well, that's why. I caught that at the show.
So how did it go?
It went great.
Give me the blow by blow.
It went great. We got there early, about 15 minutes after the gates opened, and went and staked out our spot in the lawn because we didn't have the seats. We had the lawn seats.
That's where the party really happens.
Oh, yeah. Especially when you got a 2.5-year-old. Charlie went along. It was her first Buffett concert. It was Riley's first Buffett concert. And it was Justin's first Buffett concert.
Yeah.
Because they were with us, Sydney. Taylor flew in from New York and met us there, and we all went to it, and we had a good time. Charlie was up through it, dancing on our shoulders and everything the whole time, clapping along, just like she had good sense.
Now, I remember my very first Buffett concert I ever went to. I went with you and Mary as well.
Yeah.
And I remember there were some interesting smells that were passed around from these cigarettes that were going around us.
Yeah, Riley made note of that too.
So I wondered if that was the case at this concert.
She said it sounded like it smelled like the back room or the back hallway of her high school.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The back hallway of Huntington High School smells like Jimmy Buffett concerts?
Yeah, something smells the same. I don't know.
Huh.
But we had to maintain the perimeter because I guess it's been a while since we've been to a concert where you had to sit in the lawn seating.
Yeah.
And it's like when you first get there, everybody's good natured and everybody's waving and having a good time and going around. You got your blanket spread out on the ground.
Yeah.
And everybody's, you know, very respectful and everything. Once Jimmy hit the stage, here came everybody crushing down upon us.
Yeah.
So we had to spread out and maintain the perimeter so a 2-year-old has room to move, because you can't hold a 2-year-old for 2 hours and you can't put her down amongst all the legs.
No.
So you have to maintain a perimeter to keep an open area for a 2-year-old to be in.
Sounds like an interesting issue.
It was tough.
Yeah.
It was tough. I got to say, I had the back wall and I had to hold back the forces that kept trying to push down on top of us. And then Mary and Sydney stood out front, and Justin had one side, and Riley and Taylor had the other. And we tried to maintain the perimeter and keep the riffraff out of our baby area.
Keep Charlie in the middle.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a real collection of people there. And you know, the only thing that I got is when you had the bros come through there, there was all kind of, it looked like a bro convention.
Yeah.
All these guys, early 20s, same haircut, all with their Hawaiian shirts. It's like, they knew what the dress was, but they didn't really know why they were there.
Yeah.
I call them posers. They were not old-time parrot heads like me.
No, they came for the party.
That's right. And they come down there with two giant plastic cups of beer, and they think that when they hold them up over their heads, for some reason, that's less likely to spill. When they hold them up over their heads, they lose the ability to keep the cups level.
Yeah.
And they are inadvertently, they spill on everybody as they go by.
Rain's beer at
Jimmy Buffett's
concert.
And, I mean, these bros would come shoving through, and I'd say, hey, bro, don't spill beer on my baby.
Buffett bros. Is that what you call them?
Well, no. I wasn't feeling very Buffetty towards him. I was not feeling easy and laid back Jamaican waves.
Well, you know what?
I was about ready to jump into the middle of all of them.
I went to a concert not too long ago. I went to the Dead & Company, and that was like basically a Grateful Dead show. They had John Mayer's playing with them now.
Yeah.
And we had lawn seats, and a friend of mine had gotten there ahead of time and gotten us a good seat right up front in the lawn seat. We got there a little bit late because it was really long getting a long line to get through security and get in there. So we walked right up to where his blanket was, and there was plenty of room. Everybody was really mellow and pretty chill.
Well, at a Grateful Dead concert, everybody's pretty much stoned, aren't they?
I think so. We parked the car, and within about 2 minutes of parking the car, some guy walked up to us and said, "Hey, y'all need any doses?" I was like, "No, I'm good.
That reminds me, a bunch of us went to Myrtle Beach after graduation, high school graduation, went down to Myrtle Beach for a week together. And me and one of the guys that was with me, we're walking down the street, and this guy came up, and he was your typical, at the time, what we would have called a hippie.
Mm-hmm.
Long hair, dirty jeans, and, you know, like a vest and no shirt and stuff like that. He goes, "Hey, man, you dudes want to buy some windowpane?" And I'm like, "We're staying at a hotel. We have no need for windows." I didn't even know what he was talking about, you know. And the guy that was with me, he stands there, and he just points at him and starts yelling out on the sidewalk in broad daylight, drug dealer, this man's a drug dealer. He's trying to tempt us young, impressionable teenagers. And man, that guy slithered down the street.
drug dealer, alert, run.
Danger, run, Will Robinson,
I think they're coming out with a new Lost in Space movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so.
It will never be as good as the original.
Yeah, well, that show was the
original
pretty,
series.
It was kind of, what is it, kitschy?
Yeah, I wanted to be Will Robinson when I grew up. He was my hero. Well, you know what could have saved our problem while we were at that concert?
What's that?
If we had had corporate personhood could have come in and saved us from all that trouble.
Yeah, that's a great segue.
I thought so. You like how I slipped that in there?
Yeah, it's
I usually don't know what the topic is before you bring it up, but since I knew what it was, I thought I'd try that.
I never saw that segue coming. It was so obvious. That would have saved us both at those concerts.
Wait, now you know where Sydney gets it. She's always the segwayer on Still Buffering.
So corporate personhood.
I think she does better than me, though.
corporate personhood was a topic which was suggested by Kelly Justice on our Facebook page. There was a little bit of discussion on it.
I'd never even heard of it. When she wrote that in, I said, "Sounds interesting. Don't know what the hell it is, but it sounds interesting."
Clinton von der Kinderich commented on this.
You're doing better than me.
Joshua Felick and Hannah von de Beek all commented on this thread.
Couldn't we just get a John Smith and a Sally Jones to comment? I mean, even I could say those names.
Oh, there was a Sean Christian Sims as well. So that one, I got that one.
Hans Christian Andersen?
I don't know. But they all commented about this this post and talked about it and thought it might be an interesting topic. And so you said you didn't know what corporate personhood was, though, right?
No, I had no idea what they were talking about. And the way it sounded to me, I thought it must be a modern concept in something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, boy, was I wrong.
Well, I mean, I think it's a modern concept in the way it's evolved. But as far as just a basic concept itself, it is kind of an older concept.
As old as the country.
Pretty much, yeah. So what have you learned about corporate personhood?
Well, corporate personhood, from my research that I looked up, is the ability for a corporation to act as a person, wherein it can be sued or sue, and it has certain rights that are granted to it to act. And it first took place, I mean, back in the when the crown was still over here messing around before we were the United States,
mm-hmm.
they would grant corporation to like monopolies, basically. Yeah. They would create a monopoly. The crown had to grant a corporation. It wasn't like now.
You are the corporate sugar company.
And that's it. Nobody else could be the sugar company. Yeah. It's like the first bank of the United States was the only bank that could operate for 20 years. They were the only ones granted the corporation as a bank.
Mm-hmm.
So as that evolved, though, then the states started being able to grant corporation, and it became not such a big thing. And now, of course, there are laws against monopolies. We don't want monopolies are bad.
Yeah.
So you don't want monopolies. But that it all started out that way. But then, you know, the people wanting to know what their rights are, what you can do as a corporation, And it, to me, the strangest thing of all of it is that they got their personhood from the 14th Amendment.
Yeah.
An amendment that was derived to protect freed slaves. And that's where corporations get the ability to, as they put it now, they actually have more rights than a person.
Yeah. The way the 14th Amendment was interpreted like that is kind of an interesting thing, too. So basically, the 14th Amendment was the amendment which abolished slavery and gave slaves essentially the same rights as all the other people in our country. And so what the Supreme Court did was, in this case, and it was in 1886, and it was this case called Santa Clara versus Southern Pacific. And I assume that's probably a railroad, isn't it?
Southern Pacific, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why is it all these cases have railroad names?
Well, I think the reason being is the railroads were going around taking everybody's land at that time.
Yeah.
And I'd say that a lot of it had to do with them taking people's land and the lawsuits that entailed from that and property and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah. It always makes me think of that one, I'll go off topic real quick. What was that one game that you had called, was it Rail Baron?
Rail Baron.
Do you still have that?
I don't think so. I don't think it made the last move or something.
That game was pretty fun though, because it had all those old timey different railroads in it.
Oh yeah. It had, I mean, you look at now, there's like 4 railroads in the whole United States.
Yeah.
And at the time there was like hundreds.
Yeah.
They were little ones, and they were all over the place. And that's what, in Rail Baron, you would go around and buy up all these little lines, and you know, and you could get bonuses for, like, you buy up all the railroads that made up the B&O or the C&O or Chessie system later on, or,
yeah,
you know, Southern Pacific, Norfolk Southern, all the different railroads.
I got to say, the Chessie Cat was my favorite of all the different railroad mascots.
Yeah.
I don't know any others, actually, but.
And that was derived from their old sleeper cars.
Mm-hmm.
That was the symbol when they were trying to get the general public to travel by train, when that was a popular thing back when the railroads ran that. I mean, not Amtrak. Amtrak, of course, is a government entity that took it over.
Mm-hmm.
But when the railroads ran their own passenger service, they advertised it and sold it, and that Chessie Cat was developed as their symbol of how comfortable and quiet their sleeping cars were.
Even a cat can sleep.
That's right. Huh. I remember going on some of those as a kid. And I remember that one of the things, that the bed in the room, you get one of those rooms, the bed folded down from the wall. Well, underneath that bed, when you folded it down, was the toilet, which, of course, the toilet just kind of sat right there in the room with you. So anybody you were traveling with better be a close friend.
Yeah.
You know? So if you were in the middle of the night and somebody had to pee, everybody had to get out of bed and lift the bed up so somebody could pee.
Everybody up.
Everybody up. And then you put the bed back down to go back to bed. So, you know, it had its pros and cons.
Well, everybody, that's been Tommy's Railroad Corner.
I got a million of them.
A little trip back in history for Tommy's Railroad.
Whenever
talk.
I'd start to tell a story at home, Mary would say, "Wait a minute. Is this a real story or a railroad story?"
So this case, before we got off topic about the Santa Clara versus Southern Pacific, essentially the Chief Justice at that time was Justice Waite. And before arguments started, he orally directed the lawyers that the 14th Amendment, the equal protection portions of that, guarantees constitutional protections to corporations in addition to natural persons. And that basically they should focus on other issues in the case. And actually, so this took place before the arguments. The court reporter, Bancroft Davis, noted in the head notes of the opinion that the Chief Justice began oral arguments by stating that and didn't want to hear any arguments regarding that because it had already been settled. So the interesting thing about that, though, is that that issue was technically not decided by that case because it was in the head notes and not part of the actual opinion because it was not argued.
Right. He didn't. So, it wasn't in the opinion.
Yeah. So it's actually not, it's not controlling precedent if it's in the head notes. So it has to be in the, basically the actual opinion itself before it can be cited as precedent.
But it was later picked up as that was the precedent that was set, and it was referred to in later rulings.
That's right. 2 years later, they kind of discussed that same issue again, the silver mining v. Pennsylvania case, and they actually discussed it in the actual body of the case. So that was actually where it became kind of precedent for it. One of the interesting things that has kind of grown from corporations from that time first being recognized as having some of the rights the same as natural persons, as you mentioned previously, it's kind of a convenient legal fiction to allow a corporation to sue and be sued, provides a single entity for easier taxation and regulation, And it simplifies a lot of what can be complex transactions where otherwise you might have to have like hundreds of signatures on a single document. So basically by having that one entity be the actual person, then you kind of streamline things. So it actually kind of makes a lot of sense in some regards, I think, to have a corporation be like a natural person, the right to sue and be sued and things like that.
Well, I agree for certain things that should apply, but for others, I'm not so sure.
Right.
We'll elaborate as we progress.
So as Tommy alluded to, basically what's happened is that it's kind of evolved from that first little snippet back in 1886 and 1888. One of the main things that corporations can do now, and this has caused a lot of concern, is that they can make different political contributions. As corporations grew, there's some concern that corporations might make these donations to kind of curry favor with politicians.
So exactly.
Try to influence elections.
Yes.
So in 1974, the Federal Election Campaign Act kind of limited the size of contributions made by certain entities and what they could spend in elections. The next kind of landmark case that came out, and this was in 1976, it was Buckley v. Vallejo, and this interpreted that 1974 Federal Election Campaign Act. It upheld that law, but it stated that spending money to influence elections is protected speech under the First Amendment. So
now they're getting First Amendment rights.
Right. So basically that opens the door when a corporation has First Amendment rights for protected speech. That is pretty much the genesis of our modern evaluation for a corporation as a natural person, or not a natural person, but a legal fiction person. An unnatural person. So after you have that ruling where basically it's determined that spending money to influence elections is protected speech under the First Amendment, there's not too much else until 2002 is the real next main thing. And that's when the McCain-Feingold Act was passed. That was back when politics between different parties could actually agree on something and have some sort of bipartisan agreement on issues. But basically, they agreed and they wanted to ban certain corporate funding of ads that were close to an election was one of the main things of that.
All right.
That immediately caused some lawsuits. McConnell v. Federal Election Commission was 2003, and that basically upheld the McCain-Feingold Act. And McConnell, I believe, was Mitch McConnell, the senator.
I'm sure it was.
So, litigious fellow, that McConnell.
Well, that's the way those lawyers tend to be.
So then in 2007, you have the Federal Election Commission versus Wisconsin Right to Life, and that kind of weakened the McCain-Feingold, but it upheld basically the core issues of the McConnell ruling. And then in 2010, you have the big case, and this is the one that people always think about when they talk about corporate personhood, and that is Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission. And that was basically the case where the Supreme Court held that corporate funding of independent political broadcasts and candidate elections cannot be limited under First Amendment, overruling basically all the prior cases on that, and partly overruling that McConnell decision from 2003. So, and that basically meant that it was kind of open game for corporations to spend as much as they wanted on these ads and do what they wanted with them.
Well, before we move past all the railroad cases you mentioned, Mike, I have a few other ones here that also lay out some of the things of corporate personhood.
I should have known you would do all your due diligence on the railroad research cases.
Well, it's like you say, they were right there, but they catch my eye. The railroad would always stand out to me after 21 years there. Those are the kind of things you see. 1844, Louisville, Cincinnati, and Charleston Railroad, which I have never heard of, It versus Letson. It soon became apparent that Marshall's decision in the Bank of the United States was unworkable because it put corporations outside the reach of the federal courts. 35 years later, after hearing Louisville, Cincinnati, and Charleston Railroad case, the Supreme Court shifted course, ruling that corporations were citizens of the states where they incorporated. Mm-hmm. Still, it was difficult for a corporation to sue or to be sued in federal court unless all its shareholders lived in the same state.
Oh, wow.
That was one of the requirements. So, you know, how often any big corporation do all the shareholders live in the same state, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, unless it's the Green Bay Packers.
That's right. You too can own some of the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder if, like, you could almost use that as either a sword or a shield. Like, depending on whether or not you want to be sued, you have, like, all the shareholders in one state, but...
Move one.
We got Jones out there in Oregon. Yeah. He's our one shareholder out there. He's our He's our safeguardist.
We sent him to North Dakota. Nobody wants to go there.
North Dakota's beautiful.
Now, in this one, I don't know if Marshall was John Marshall, 1853. I don't know if that was too late for him to be around there, but it says Marshall versus Baltimore and Ohio Railroad. The Supreme Court later upheld the notion that corporations were citizens, but only for the purposes of court jurisdiction. They did not have the same constitutional rights as actual people. The court also ruled that for litigation purposes, shareholders would be considered citizens of their company's home state. So that made it easier for corporations to sue or be sued in federal court by eliminating jurisdictional conflicts. So in other words, it didn't matter where you lived. If you were a shareholder, that made it wherever the company was incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of
right.
solved that problem.
Well, that makes sense.
Building on their rights there, Smith versus Ames.
Is Ames a railroad?
No, that one wasn't. And I don't think it was the department store either. I think it was something else. Building on that Santa Clara
Ames
decision.
Is a helpful hardware place. Is that it?
Ames?
Yeah.
It's not Ames, is it?
I don't know. That's Ace.
Ace, yeah. Ace. I knew it sounded close, but not quite right.
Ace is the place for your helpful hardware place.
As long as it's not Slows.
Slows?
Yeah. Nobody there knows what's going on. Building on the Santa Clara decision, the court voided a Nebraska railroad tax, ruling that it was akin to the government taking a corporation's property without due process.
Okay.
A violation of its 14th Amendment's rights. So what it was saying, the state enacted a tax strictly aimed at the railroad and mm-hmm. gathering money for their state for it. And they said, hey, if you singled out some individual or individual group and started taxing them just because of how they did their business, that would be discrimination. How can you do it against us?
Yeah.
The court found in their favor.
So that was a railroad case.
Well, yeah, it was. I don't know who one of those guys was the president of that railroad or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't explain all that. I don't have all the answers. I just have some of them.
Collis P. Ames.
Then in 1906, Hale v. Hinkle. Having blocked unlawful seizures of corporate property, the court went on to shield companies from other kinds of intrusion. Writing for the majority, Justice Henry Billings Brown found that corporations, like people, are protected from unreasonable search and seizures under the Fourth Amendment.
Right.
So now they pick up Fourth Amendment rights as well. Although the Fifth Amendment protection against self-incrimination does not apply.
Yeah, that wouldn't make much sense because
you're not incriminating yourself because you are not the corporation, even if you're a part of the corporation.
Yeah, you can have a legal fiction, but it can only be so much of a fiction.
Yeah, but evidently people have tried to invoke the Fifth Amendment rights when corporations have been involved in the lawsuits, but supposedly they won't let you invoke them.
No, it doesn't. I couldn't see how that would apply.
Said that
and most of these other things, like when you think about the reasons why corporations have these kinds of protections, it makes sense because it leads to kind of streamlining the process, and that just makes sense. But I don't think the Fifth Amendment would make much sense.
In 1931, which this is strange because this is between World War I and World War II,
mm-hmm.
Russian volunteer fleet versus United States. A Russian shipbuilder, Russian volunteer fleet, sued the U.S. government, claiming that government officials had unlawfully seized property worth more than $4 million. The high court sided with the company, ruling that even foreign corporations are protected from unlawful government seizures under the Fifth Amendment. So they do get that protection of the Fifth Amendment.
Right. Well, that makes sense because, I mean, essentially what you would be having, I mean, what foreign corporation would want to do business here if basically they could just have their assets seized or taken without any kind of due process.
So. You mean like other countries do to us sometimes? Shell Oil or somebody down in Argentina or something? Mm-hmm. I think it was Argentina. It was a South American country. They just came in and took over their plant.
Yeah.
And evidently they had done it to several other companies down there, but I think it's more because they've got an unstable government right now.
Yeah, that got something to do with the two, I guess.
Yeah, it's hard to maintain control when you can't even maintain your government, huh?
But I have legal right to be here. Well, I have an AK-47.
I have a contract.
Yeah, I have a gun.
You see this piece of paper?
I have a contract. I have a gun. Okay.
So they don't play rock, paper, scissors, huh? They play gun, paper, scissors.
Yeah, well, you send lawyers, guns, and money. That's
the crap has hit the fan.
That's right.
Then in 1977, United States versus Martin Linen Supply Company. After a criminal trial for two linen companies and their owner was dismissed due to jury deadlock, federal prosecutors appealed the decision. The Supreme Court ruled that a second trial violated the company's rights to be tried only once, expanding double jeopardy rule to include both humans and corporations.
Yeah.
So I just found that interesting. I would not think that a corporation comes under the same things as an ordinary citizen.
Yeah.
And they're granted citizens' rights.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you think about it, the one catchphrase that you always hear about corporations is the right to sue and be sued. That's like the catchphrase, like I said. I mean, I don't know what term you would use for that, but.
But then in a lot of other cases, and maybe this is off track from what we're talking about, but I feel like people hide behind corporate entities to get away with things too. I mean, like Wells Fargo, for example, mm-hmm. their big scam that they had, that they built all those customers and signed them up for credit cards they never got and everything. The people that ran that bank should have gone to jail. I mean, they should have had criminal charges against them, but they was like, oh, that was just corporate policy. You know, we changed our policy. We have our HR people now. They're giving classes to that. We're not setting up incentives so that people do that anymore. We're good corporate citizens. No, you guys knew what was happening. You were taking the money. You were lining your pockets. You had people that left there with $100 million bonuses, and that was their penalty. They had to leave the company and take their $100 million and go home. Gee, somebody punished me like that.
It doesn't sound like such a bad thing.
But I mean, there should be reach and consequences. But they hid behind the corporation and the corporate structure, and they weren't held accountable. And it was no different than Madoff. It was the same type thing. It was a Ponzi scheme.
Well, I don't know if that was a Ponzi scheme, was it, for the credit cards?
Well, not really, but I mean, in essence, it worked out the same way. They were still taking in millions of people's money without them knowing it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think they hide behind it to a certain degree, but I mean, there has been a lot of prosecution, I think, for corporations, but I think it tends to be kind of glossed over by the government. They don't seem to take as much zeal with that as they do some other cases.
Well, maybe the really heinous ones, you know, where it's involved, where they, you know, have actually gone in and strong-armed people, or murders have taken place, or blackmail, or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, things like that. But just corporate greed? No, they don't do it over corporate greed, which that Wells Fargo thing is definitely a case of corporate greed.
I would like to cite the movie Wall Street, where in Gordon Gekko said, "Greed is good, Your Honor." It is noted.
You want a friend, get a dog.
Is that what he says?
Yeah. So he says, I have no friends. You want a friend? Get a dog.
So, but after that Citizens case in 2010, the next case, which expanded just that whole corporate thing a little bit more, was this Western Tradition Partnership versus Attorney General of Montana. And basically, Montana had a older law which basically prohibited corporate spending in elections there. The U.S. Supreme Court basically said that older Montana law did not preclude the citizens ruling, that basically the citizens ruling overruled that Montana law. So again, kind of saying that expanding the citizens even more, so it even if you have a state law which says it doesn't matter because citizens covers that as well.
Well, so, yeah, you can't have a state law overriding a federal law.
Yeah. So, I mean, the citizens case and the whole expansion of corporate personhood, there's kind of, I guess, two schools of thought with it. My initial thought about it was that I didn't like it. And I think you said that, you know, you didn't like it either.
Because I don't.
Why don't you like it?
Well, I think in general, I'm okay with it. It's when it comes to the election stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because in elections already, the problem we have with our government is money. There's way too much money changing hands during these elections. And these politicians that are there because of the money.
Right.
They're not there to do the right thing. That's why we need term limits. And that's why we need to take the money out of it. There needs to be a set amount of money you can spend at each office. You know, state level, here's what you can spend. Federal level, here's what you can spend. And of course, the higher the office, that amount would go up. But that amount would not be hundreds of millions of dollars like are spent now.
Yeah.
I mean, we know who these people are. You know, go do Fallon, go do Kimmel. You know, if you want people to see you, you want to get your message out or something like that, they'll put you on and all you want. So you don't have to worry about getting your name out there or what you want to talk about. Go hold a rally. People will show up and listen to you, but you don't have to do all these commercials running down the other person. All it does is everybody's bad, so we just got to vote for who's ever the least bad.
Yeah, it does make things a bit more divisive, I think.
Yeah.
So that's one opinion, is that basically too much money and it's influencing elections, and that's not good.
And it's influencing poor decisions on the part of the politicians, because their decisions are made strictly on what getting reelected and not on what's best for their people.
Now, here's the other side of that, and this is an argument I actually hadn't thought about until I started looking at this. And this is basically that by limiting the corporate voice and their ability to spend in these situations, you're essentially limiting free speech, and it's going to help incumbent politicians muzzle people who want change. So that's the other side of that coin, is that basically if you limit these corporations and outside entities by how much they can spend, then what you're doing is you're helping the incumbents because they're already in there. And so allowing more free speech in turn will create a more democratic process.
Well, I can follow that logic. I can see where that goes. But here again, if you set spending limits and both people can only spend X number of dollars, right, it gives you, if both guys have the same size megaphone, then it's an equal race.
Right. So here's the deal. If you go down this train of thought and you say, okay, we're going to not allow corporations to do this, but you also have to have some sort of spending limits on there as well, and term limits and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the basic split for this is that conservatives and libertarians are kind of basically for this citizen's case, whereas liberals and campaign finance reformers basically don't like it, and they don't like the fact that there's going to be more money in politics.
Well, I mean, let's face it. The people that are making the decisions on these corporations and how much money they invest in, you know, campaigns, mm-hmm, are rich guys that are just trying to either help their own business or their own selves. And they have an unequal voice in what they're able to do over the ordinary citizen. If they're a citizen, let them count as one. If they're a corporate citizen, let them be a corporate citizen of one. And then operate under the same guise as a corporate citizen of one does, which you have limits. You can't go spend, even if you had billions of dollars, you can't go give it to candidates.
Right, so it has to be a complete campaign reform.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, they should have the same, whatever the restriction is for me, Procter & Gamble should have the same restriction. They're one person. If they're a corporate personhood, they're one person. They should count the same. They should have the same restriction.
The other thought, too, is that these corporations basically, they don't influence it as much with the money, because most of their influence is based on long-term relationships that they build with these different politicians.
Term limits.
Yeah, exactly. Term limits would combat that. So, I mean, I don't know. It's actually more, there's a bigger split with regard to the people's thought process on whether this is good or bad than you would think. It seems that not one clear-cut way people think about it. People either like it or people either hate it. That's about it.
Well, it just falls in line with me with the whole money problem. I mean, like, why are all the senators and congressmen millionaires? They weren't millionaires before they got elected. And their jobs in Congress and in the Senate, they don't pay them millions of dollars a year. Why are they millionaires? Where is that money coming from? I mean, we're kidding ourselves if we don't think that people are, funding them directly and funding their lifestyles. And that's why they don't want to give it up. If you had to go in there and your salary was just that of a, you know, maybe an upper mid-level income earner, you know, not high end and not low end and maybe upper middle class. If that's where the salary was and you went in there just to make a difference and do what you could and you didn't get all that extra money, you would probably make better decisions on what you're doing, because you wouldn't be there just making the decisions about what's going to get you more money.
That's true.
Because there's no more money to make.
I think as soon as they win one election, they immediately start thinking about the next election or the next sure thing they're going to run for.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like the Attorney General Morrissey, who just won here in West Virginia.
Well, he got reelected.
Oh, he got reelected.
He was already the Attorney General. He got reelected.
He got reelected in November.
Yeah.
I think today or yesterday he announced he's going to run for Senate.
Right. He's going to run against Joe Manchin. Well, first he's going to have to beat Shelley Moore Capito, because she announced she's going to run too.
Yeah.
And she just got reelected to Congress.
So, I mean, but here's the thing. He just got elected to be Attorney General. Why is he running? Why is he running for that? I think he should focus on the job he was elected to do.
Sure.
So, I don't know.
We are the voice, and we are not exercising our voice. We're putting these same people out there. We don't come up with better candidates. We let these two parties dictate to us. You know, wouldn't we be better off if we had a strong third and fourth party to choose from? Maybe then things wouldn't get so far out of hand. But you have two parties, and they're just, they're the ones that have all the power. Everything goes to them, and we all bow down to them.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think we're going to solve it in this podcast, though.
Well, let's try.
I just did. I just gave you everything I had.
You gave me all I got. You're done, huh?
So, well, that's corporate personhood.
The glass is empty.
The glass is empty. But I did want to talk a little bit about how you form a corporation and the different corporate entities, because that's kind of something a bit more palpable that you might be able to understand a bit more. Because this other stuff is kind of, it's out there a little bit. We start talking about theories about corporate personhood and things like that. So,
well, it is strange to think about a company exercising its 14th Amendment right, or its Fourth Amendment rights, or its First Amendment rights. And here's what really put it over the top for me. Here's one that said, in the future, what do we have to worry about? Corporations exercising their Second Amendment rights. That they're dead serious. Said, if a corporation has First Amendment rights, could it also claim Second Amendment protections? Amazingly, this is a question some scholars are seriously pondering. As Daryl A.H. Miller wrote in his 2011 article, Guns Incorporated, in the NYU Law Review, if Citizens United is taken seriously, the Second Amendment, like the First Amendment, and like many other provisions of the Bill of Rights, guarantees liberties to natural and corporate persons alike. Bang.
Bang. Well, I don't know. I think you can pick and choose a little bit, and I think it calls for some the Supreme Court to kind of look at this not just as a, well, they get this right, so they must get that right. I think they're going to have to kind of pick and choose a little bit. I mean, they don't give them the Fifth Amendment right to remain silent, so I don't think they would give them the right to bear arms. So, I mean, I don't know. That's my opinion, what it's worth.
Well, you know, there's you never know. There's the Hobby Lobby ruling that let them out of Obamacare, which was the law of the land.
Yeah.
And it let them out of that.
Yeah. That was the case where Hobby Lobby didn't want to provide contraception, I think, to their employees through their medical. Is that correct?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because part of the Obamacare had contraception as part of it. So they said because of religious objections, yet they don't object to stealing other countries' ancient religious artifacts.
Oh, that's right. That came out in the news too.
Yeah. Where they'd paid like $4.3 million something to have these artifacts smuggled in crates marked ceramic dishes or something like that.
Yeah, they had to give them back, didn't they?
Yeah, plus pay a penalty. But here again,
those belong in a museum.
Here again, though, there's no criminal charges. They're just paying a fine and saying, "Oh, well, my bad. Sorry about that, dude. Here's a check. You know, we won't do that anymore. Thanks." And nobody's standing responsible. And this was an active smuggling case. They were smuggling things in they knew were illegal, and it was against the law. And that's okay. They did it under the name of the corporation.
And you're talking like some sort of anarchist over here, Tommy.
I am. And we we didn't really land on the moon. It was all in a soundstage in New Mexico.
So, corporations and other business entities are basically you in order to form a corporation, you have to do it in your own state. It's not some sort of federal thing where you file to make a company or a corporation. You actually take a class in law school. It's usually mandatory. It's called corporations. Sometimes it's called business associations, because not every company is a corporation. There's different kinds of business entities. So, for example, Tridata, is that Tridata Inc.?
Yes.
All right, that's a corporation.
Correct.
So
we are an L corp.
An L corp. Mm-hmm. You could also have an S corp, which is with flow through taxation. It's something different, but it's still a corporation.
Not to be confused with an S cargo.
No, not to be confused. Anything that has a designation Inc., Corp., or Limited is actually a corporation, and that's technically what it is. And in order to form a corporation, what you do is you have articles of incorporation that you would file with the Secretary of State, and that's how you form it in each individual state.
As opposed to a partnership.
Right. A partnership is a different kind of legal fiction, and it has different requirements as well. You also have LLCs, which are limited liability companies. And the difference between limited liability companies and corporations is that you have members in LLCs, and basically in corporations, you have shares and things like that, and different like board of directors and things like that. I mean, they're all just kind of different, and basically they're all different legal entities which allow people to conduct business.
The corporation, the main benefit, like why we went with a corporation instead of like a partnership, because we're a small business.
Right.
So you think corporations being big businesses, well, we're a small business, but we're incorporated because the money that goes through the company is not tied to any individual.
Yeah.
The company pays its own taxes, is responsible for things that goes on their own. So if not, then you had to have your finances tied to what the company does, and your tax brackets are going to go up and down and everything depending on how the company goes and stuff.
Yeah. So really a lot of reasons why people choose different kind of business entities is because their accountant and their tax strategy, because based on how you try to limit your tax obligations is really how you want to figure out what you want to do for these different business entities.
Right.
So when we say corporations, I think, you know, especially what we were just talking about, we're talking about like much larger corporations too. But obviously, like if you had some sort of legislation pending that could really affect your business and you wanted to make a large contribution to it too, obviously that Citizens case could you know, help you to do that as well, I guess.
Yeah, my bank account wouldn't help me though.
No, probably not.
I don't think anything I'd be willing to donate would be considered large.
Yeah, but I think for the purposes of when we're talking about corporations, we're essentially discussing all different kinds of business entities because they're all different kinds of companies and different legal fictions. They all have the ability to sue and be sued, which is that one kind of catchphrase that's the important thing. So I believe they all probably have these same rights, not just corporations themselves.
Even if I had a bunch of money, I wouldn't give it to any of them. None of them are worth a plugged nickel.
So if you do have a corporation or other kind of business entity, you generally have to file, like I said, some sort of articles incorporation. That's called something different for a LLC. It's articles of organization for an LLC. So it's, you know, as opposed to corporation, articles of incorporation, it's articles of organization. But they're basically the same things. It lays out who the president is, what the business address is, what the purpose of the business is. And usually whenever I help somebody form a business, I always say it's for any and all legal purposes. So they can do basically whatever they want. So it's always
as long as it's legal.
As long as it's legal. It's a good thing.
And if it's a partnership, then you take a picture of you and the other guy shaking hands and you mail that to the Secretary of State.
That's it. That's all you got to do. You heard it here.
See, partner, he's my partner. We shook hands.
All the different rules and what you have to do vary state by state. But generally, you're going to have what's called a registered agent as well. So if you ever heard the term registered agent.
Registered agent.
Yeah, that's basically somebody who can act as the service point for service of process if you are suing or being sued. A lot of times the attorney or whoever helped them form that corporation or business entity will serve as the registered agent as well. And so basically if you sue a company, you serve the registered agent. That's who accepts it. Because again, it's a legal fiction. It's not an actual person. Like for example, if I was going to sue you, I would actually hand you the papers. But if I was going to sue Tridata, I would have to sue your registered agent or whoever that is. So,
well, we have a lawyer. I don't talk to him much because it costs me money if I talk to him. So I don't say much.
Smart maneuver. So, and also when you have your business entity, you also get a federal tax ID number.
I got one of those.
Yep. And you use that with your articles, and generally you can go to the bank and open a bank account, and then you have your business bank account.
That's right.
So that's kind of basically the quick overview of how a corporation or business entity is formed in state by state. It varies a little bit, but that's essentially it. So
the one thing I don't like about being a small business, though, even if you're incorporated, you know, you go to a bank, you're a business applying for a loan. Look at what the company is doing and make your decision on whether to give the company a loan based on the company.
Yeah.
But they don't.
No, they want to look at you.
Yeah. I got to give them my information and fill out all kinds of stuff about myself. Because I'm one of the owners. Well, you know, I'm not guaranteeing this. So if you're looking at my income to pay these bills, you're out of luck. The company's going to pay the bills, not me.
Yeah. You should take a copy of that Citizens case with him. Like, my company's a person.
Yeah. My company's a person. If you won't give this person a loan, don't look to me. I'm not his co-signer.
Well, it's funny.
I didn't take the boy to raise.
With a lot of corporate leases, and I was actually just discussing this today, they want personal guarantees on all these different documents. So it's like, what's the purpose of even having this corporation if I have to give a personal guarantee on all this stuff? Like,
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Does Donald Trump give a personal guarantee on everything Trump does?
Yeah. I just don't get that. I mean, if I looked at all the bills that I pay for my company, you know, that the company pays, and then you say, okay, well, the company can't pay those bills. You're going to turn to me to pay those? Sorry, pal, you're out of luck.
Yeah.
When I say small business, we are a small business. Ain't nobody getting rich here.
So you maybe heard the phrase piercing the corporate veil before.
Yes.
And that's essentially if there's a company, because basically if you have a corporation, you are shielded from liability from what the company does. So it's a good way to shield exposure for any kind of lawsuit. But there is a possibility to pierce the corporate veil and essentially go after the person, the shareholders of that corporation or owners of it. And usually that's if there's some sort of fraud or deceit on their part.
Like Wells Fargo?
Yeah, like Wells Fargo. Or if it's like underfinanced. So basically you put on airs that you have all this money or whatever, but you really don't have any money. And it was, again, kind of a fraud issue that you basically duped somebody into contracting with you and you don't have the money to pay that. So yeah, it's pretty interesting, the different things about corporations and whatnot.
Well, in the talking about the ones where you dupe people into thinking you have more than what you do or whatever, is that like, wasn't that kind of one of the main thrusts behind the too big to fail?
Yeah,
that they went through on that, you know, everybody's, all the things, all the margins were out there, but nobody had the real cash behind it.
Yeah. Oh, one other thing I was going to talk about with regard to businesses and different things. If you're doing business with a company or a corporation, a partnership, oftentimes you'll see on their advertisements, like it'll say Tridata Inc. And the reason it says Inc. is because actually it's a law that you have to have that. Because if somebody is going to be doing business with a corporation, the name itself has to actually denote that it is a corporation, and there is limited liability there. So that's just one of those kind of things.
Yeah, I've seen one that say LLC.
Yeah, so that basically means you know what kind of business you're dealing with there.
Yeah, we always put Inc. on ours.
Yeah. Now, there is a way around that, too, because you could also do, you could have a company, and then you could do a fictitious name filing where you...
AKA.
Yeah, AKA. And you could call it whatever you want, and mm-hmm. that fictitious name would actually be owned by the corporation, mm-hmm. and you wouldn't have to actually have ink or whatever on your letterhead.
So. Like, for instance, we talked about fireworks last week.
Mm-hmm.
Like Crazy Sam's. They're probably not Crazy Sam's Incorporated.
No, well, I
you
mean...
know, that's probably doing business as. They're probably like, you know, Acme Fireworks Incorporated, doing business as Crazy Sam's or whatever.
Yeah, Crazy Sam's Inc.
Yeah. Well, no, not Crazy Sam's Inc. They're just on business.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Crazy
yeah.
Sam's.
Crazy Sam's Inc. doing business as Crazy Sam's.
Or something. Or it could be a totally different name.
Could be.
Could be yeah. Acme Fireworks Inc. doing business as Crazy Sam's.
Could be.
Silly Sam's.
Silly Sam's.
Something like that.
Yeah, but a fictitious name is one way around having to denote what kind of company or corporation you are.
What makes you a conglomerate?
Conglomerate?
Yeah. I want to be a conglomerate. That sounds big. That sounds like you are making a lot of money if you're a conglomerate. I don't know what a conglomerate is, though.
My pedestrian understanding of what a conglomerate is, with being totally caught off guard, I think would be that it's several...
I'm caught off guard, too. I just thought of it.
It's several companies or corporations which are somehow together.
Somehow linked together?
Yeah.
I want to be a conglomerate.
Yeah.
What do you do? I'm a conglomerate.
Maybe it's like if it's a different corporations and they have like a chemical one and then something else and medical devices one, but then they also have like a paint thing, which is the byproduct of the chemicals they do, and mm-hmm. they all work together and kind of share their resources back and forth. Maybe that's a conglomerate. I don't know. That sounds like it.
It sounds like it.
It's plausible.
Did you see that the paint maker here in Huntington is closing up after like 80 years? Being in business, and now it's closing.
Which paint maker?
One right behind Stewart's there on Fifth Avenue.
Oh, BASF?
Yeah.
They're closing?
Yeah, it's not BASF anymore. It's some other name. They were taken over by something polymer or something like that.
Oh, okay.
And they're closing. But I think that it's because they didn't diversify enough. They only make one color.
What color?
That's true. I mean, it's not a joke. I'm not setting you up. I saw the look on your face like there was a punchline coming. But it's the truth. They only make one color. It's something like India Blue or something like that. And the demand for India Blue has dropped, so they're closing the plant. That's the only color they make.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
I think they pigeonholed themselves too much. I mean, it's okay to have a niche product, but I think they niched themselves out of business.
I'm just amazed at that.
But I never knew that till I read it in the paper the other day. But the thing is, I do remember a lot of times you'd be there waiting for your hot dogs, and you'd see guys come out of that plant, and they'd be wearing the respirators. And when they moved them, here was their mouth and nose area all regular colored skin, and their face would be like a blue tint to it.
Yeah, there was a one group in there that worked together, and they were called the Blue Man Group.
The Blue Man Group? And most of them, rest of them were known as the Smurfs.
Well, I think that's going to do it for our episode on corporate personhood.
Well, all except for legal briefs, briefs. I thought you forgot them, dude.
No, never forget legal briefs.
That's good. You almost did one time.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not infallible.
You were ready to sign off. I said, wait a minute.
So legal briefs is the part of the show where we go.
And this is number 52.
It is number 52. It's our 52nd episode. It
marks 1 year that we've been doing this. This concludes our first year. Well, maybe July, our first and last.
July 25th will be the actual 1 year anniversary.
Yeah, but this is our concludes 1 year of podcasts.
Full year of podcasts.
52 weeks in a year, right?
Last time I checked.
So that makes 52. We covered it there.
That's right. One whole year.
Well, happy birthday.
Thanks. It's not till next week.
Well, we'll be on air. I mean, we won't be here then.
No, we'll be here on the 25th, won't we?
I don't know. What is today? I don't know. I don't even know where we're at.
Today is
let's
the
see,
12th.
The 14th is Friday, 15, 16, 17. Oh, well, how come we're getting 53? How come we could get 53 in before we hit our anniversary? Something's wrong there.
Leap year.
Leap year? They added a week?
I don't know.
Man, now I am confused.
No, but we released our first episode on July 25th. So,
oh, well.
So then basically each week was essentially, I don't know, this seems like a lot of math. I need to get a calculator out.
I haven't been drinking enough to handle that kind of math.
Well, so back to legal briefs.
Happy birthday.
Next year we promise half the law and twice the rambling.
No, we better do it the other way. We're already at that point. Our ratio is already skewed.
The first term is articles of incorporation.
Let's see. Articles of incorporation are what you have to file with the Secretary of State to incorporate your business.
Exactly. What are some of the type of things you have to have in your articles of incorporation?
You have to have who your shareholders are and who your board of directors or your officers. Actually, your officers of the company. And I don't know, like a mission statement or something like that.
Your purpose?
Yeah, your purpose.
This is my mission
what
statement.
What you do.
I'm going to sell India blue paint.
Until it no longer exists.
That is it.
Until they put me out of business and find a new color. They went to black. Damn it, black put us out of business.
Yes, your mission statement and also who your registered agent is, or basically who's going to be your service of process for to sue and be sued. So,
kind of along the same lines. Did you see the thing about the Pakistani government officials that are in trouble for fraud?
No,
I think it's Pakistani. It's something like that. That they filed these documents that they're saying were fraud, that were covering up where they were stealing money or something like that. The members of the government or the daughter of the president or something like that. And the way they said that it was, the way they knew it was fraud is she used a font that wasn't available until a year after when these papers were supposed to be filed.
Ooh.
So they're saying that font is what they're using as evidence to say that she manufactured these documents a year after the fact to try to cover their tracks.
Ma'am, Comic Sans did not come out until...
It was Cambria or something like that.
Cambria?
Yeah, the standard Microsoft font.
Mm.
And so that's what's got them. But now there's some of them that are going and saying, it was available by special download if you had checked. You could have gotten it as far back as 2004.
That's why I put everything in Comic Sans. Not really. Don't hate me. There's a lot of hate out there for Comic Sans. I don't know if you knew that or not.
We were talking about ink, and so that's what made me think I read that today. Threw your curveball.
Yeah, I know. Like, where am I going now? All right, now this is not necessarily a term, but this is actually a question.
Oh, no. An actual question?
Yes.
And I have to have an actual answer?
You do.
Damn.
Now, the Santa Clara v. Southern Pacific case in 1886 was the first case to mention that basically the 14th Amendment guaranteed equal protection to corporations, but it was not binding precedent. Why was that?
Because it was put in the headnote of the ruling and not in the actual verbiage of the ruling.
That's right. You were paying attention.
Of the opinion, I guess I should have said.
Yeah, you were paying attention.
Yes, of course I was. Because I came across that same thing, too, that the guy writing it down basically put that in, that he referred to that, and then that became the later was referred to and set as precedent, and it never really was. It's a precedent that wasn't really a precedent.
That's right. Now, let's see. You're going to get 1 point for every different kind of business association you can name.
Business association?
Yeah, or business entity.
A corporation,
mm-hmm.
an LLC,
mm-hmm.
a partnership,
mm-hmm.
and a loosely held group.
Loosely held group?
Some guys that know each other and talk on the internet.
LHG?
Yeah. Some guys know each other and talk on the internet.
You mean, did you say LLC?
Yeah, I said LLC already.
What does LLC stand for?
Limited Liability Corporation. Company.
Yep, company. So,
limited liability company.
Now, there's some other weird ones, too. There's PA, which stands for Professional Association. A lot of times you'll see, like, doctors, lawyers, engineers, things like that will have that.
I thought that meant public address.
Nope.
That's CPA?
CPA.
Certified Public Accountant.
Yeah, but that's not actually a term, like NBA or...
NBA?
Yeah.
National Basketball Association?
Yeah, there you go.
What about Esquire?
Esquire.
Isn't that what all you lawyers are? You're all Esquires?
Yep. A lot of people put that on their different things.
On your shingle?
Yeah. I don't.
You hang that on your shingle?
I don't put that on my own things. Like if I'm sending a letter to another attorney, I'll put Esquire at the end of their name, but I don't do it at the end of my own. Like if on my own letterhead, whenever it says my name at the little signature block, I don't put Esquire after my own name. I think that's pretentious. So.
Well, then there's the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yes, I am a member of that.
Okay.
So.
I'm not. I have nothing extraordinary. I'm just a small business owner and a dude.
Don't sell yourself short. You're very extraordinary.
AB normal.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Sprung. And I...